So we only have three problems. One is greed, one is anger, and the third is delusion. According to the Buddha, as a nice summary, these are the problematic natures of being a human. Greed and aversion. So just think of pushing away the world and pulling it towards you. There are another, you know, secondary variations. Agitation, sloth, doubt, etc. are aspects, but basically they come under these three, the three roots of that are problematic. The greed and anger have their roots in delusion, so they both come out of misunderstandings about the nature of yourself and the nature of the world around you and your relationship to this. And so delusion is just, it's the image is a blind person tapping a cane, walking in the wrong direction. And now the person cannot see, so they don't realize they're going in the wrong direction. So the nature of delusion is that it does not appear as delusion. It doesn't reveal itself. It's therefore difficult to deal with. Look back on your life about mistaken ideas you had, prejudices, confused ideas, and remember what it felt like. It felt like that it was obviously true what you thought. And then later on, and people around you that were of another opinion were obviously wrong. And then sometimes you come to a different conclusion and then you agree with them and you think, yeah, I was wrong. But it's amazing how I didn't feel wrong. So it's utterly convincing. If it's not utterly convincing, it's not really delusion. So that's why it's tricky to deal with. It's an absolutely magical conviction. And out of these out of this arises the greed and the anger. And all kinds of other, the whole spectrum of aversion and the whole spectrum of desire. So we can only uproot it ultimately by getting to this delusion. That's very tricky. But one week we can spot delusion because you can actually feel anger and you can feel desire. And that, so what you do is you infer, you say, I must be deluded. I'm furious at you. Therefore, there's something wrong with you? No. Therefore, there's something wrong with me. I'm furious at you, therefore, I'm deluded. I really want something. I must be deluded. So it's really interesting. So that's what it feels like, you know? It's amazing. At least I know. Yeah, I can't believe it, but I know. So we're taking it on faith that these things manifest because of misunderstandings, and just think on your life about people you were mad at, and well, it can happen in a week, and you know, somebody, you're angry at somebody, and a week later they're your best friend. They're back in your good graces. So what do you make of this? How does this happen? This illusion comes over you. So this is the magic of the mind, and we approach it by seeing what we can see, and that is these coarser, more direct defilements. And by reducing their occurrence, not feeding them, as we say, not feeding them, because they are the nutrition, the nutriment of delusion. Delusion cannot be addressed directly, but you can starve it. If you don't feed it, it weakens. So you remember the story yesterday about the woman, the 45-year-old woman who had a fight with her father, and just staying overnight at his house, and suddenly they got into a fight, and not a fisticuffs, but a verbal throwdown. And she was astonished at herself because she'd been meditating for 15 years. But what she also was astonished at is how quickly it lifted and how quickly she saw how it had no reality to it, that she just had lost her practice. And that it came back to her very quickly. She recovered very quickly from it. And she was more or less an observer of all these things. It just, she was watching the recovery happen very fast. So what had she been doing? She had been weakening the roots of delusion. She hadn't uprooted it, but she'd been weakening it by not feeding it. So that's why the restoration of her, of clarity and balance and common sense returned quickly, because she had weakened the power of her delusional states. She said, you know, if I'd had that 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I wouldn't have gotten over it for months. You know, so when we work at these things and deprive delusion of its food, of ignorance of its food, we get handed results. So the results are quite surprising. We don't know what's who we are. We find out in situations. What we find out is, I used to be this way, and now I'm this way. And I really didn't know that. It's not always obvious until certain circumstances come up. Then you find out. So we work at it through the hindrances, primarily. Through the hindrances, weakening the hindrances. Don't neglect that. That is the ultimate food of delusion, is the hindrances. When you, the fact that you're dealing with them temporarily, that you're suppressing them, that you're diverting them, that you're replacing them, that you're giving them a talk on what we call hiriotapa. So this is one of the ways of reducing your hindrances, is give them a talk, say, this is not very pretty. This is a blemish on my personality. And I look in the mirror, it's not pretty. And in the future, not everybody's not going to like this. And so that's a talk on hiriotapa. By the way, don't give your talk to yourself about the past. It's not a guilt talk. Guilt is debilitating, inappropriate. But hiriotapa, a sort of an appropriate fear and shame regarding the present and the future. So you'd be ashamed to do such and such, because what would the wise think of that? You would be afraid to do such and such, because that the wise would never approve of that. By the way, you're only referencing the opinion of the wise here, not general opinion. And quite often we're very self-conscious, we're worried about everybody's opinion. But unfortunately, you know, you really have to make a commitment not to have regard for the opinion of anybody but the wise. And sometimes that means that the unwise won't have a high opinion of you. And that, so be it. It just has to be that way. There's lots of people out there today who are watching that soccer game, is it? Yeah. Who don't approve of what you're doing. They can't understand that. But the wise approve. Well, I say, you're much better here. You know, I should not. So this is the nature of it. Who are you going to listen to? Not just anybody. And also be wary of guilt. Please just let it go. It's not useful. The past is the past. Huge burdens can be just let go. Why should you let go of guilt? Aren't you a bad person for doing that? Shouldn't you suffer? Well, maybe you're not a bad person. You were an ignorant person who was unskillful. You were. But that's not you now. You wouldn't think of yourself that way if you were still the same person. So the very fact that you even have any guilt about it means that you're not that person. So you don't have to worry about that person. That person's gone. Gone, gone, gone. Any results that you're going to get from unskillful actions should not be addressed by guilt or infliction of pain. It's too late. What you're going to have, there can be results from these things. They come back on you. And all you can do is face that with courage and equanimity. Face the results with courage and equanimity. That's the appropriate response. And in the meantime, keep your eye on the present and the future. with diligence and due regard for your own safety and well-being, your own reputation amongst the wise, not general reputation, or reputation amongst the wise. And those are the skillful way to deal with it. And it's hard to convince people that they really just can let go of the burden of guilt. But you're the only one that can let go of the burden of guilt. No one else can do it for you. It's very important. So this is the you can see the hindrances directly. They are the food of delusion. You cannot see delusions directly, but it will melt away. Clarity will appear. More or less, your health will be restored, your sanity. It may not be restored. Maybe you were never sane. For the first time, you will be lucid and clear and behave in a wise way. So if you refuse to feed the delusion with the hindrances. So that's why it's so profitable to keep your eye on this and remember that there are some very specific teachings by the Buddha about how to remove these things, how to prevent these things from re-arising, how to dismiss them, to replace them, to use hiri, otapa, fear and shame, to get rid of them, how to bring them down in stages. Sometimes you can't just stop them dead in their tracks. You're angry, and it's just like, it's on a roll. It's too late. It's on a roll. But could you bring it down in stages? So a man is running, and then he thinks, well, why am I running? Why don't I walk? So he walks. And he thinks, why am I walking? Why don't I sit down? So he sits down. Why am I sitting down? Why don't I lie down? And he's lying down. Now that hindrance is gone. That anger is gone. So four stages. Now what is it to run, to walk, to sit, to lie down? It's a variety of things. There's all kinds of ways of when you can't stop something suddenly, you stop it gradually, in stages. You bring it down, distract yourself, reward yourself. Go talk to somebody. Go for a walk. Take a bath, whatever. Exercise. Listen to a Dhamma talk. These things are ways of staging it down. And have a few in your pocket, sort of tactics like that you go through. So, I mean, in the old days, they would say, there's a saying, I think it's by Jefferson, you know, one of the founding fathers in the U.S. He says, if angry, count to 10. If very angry, 100. So, yeah, just to count to it, just counting to them, 99, 98, count backwards, count forwards. And these are just features of the mind that have momentum and inertia and so forth. They're just something to be dealt with, almost like the physical world. Don't take them personally. They're just structures built into nature. They're not yours. They are scattered in various configurations through all human personalities. They're universal features, not to be taken personally. But they respond to very specific medicines, so there are specific techniques. Now, you will hear again anicca as a kind of a technique, and all the hindrances actually can be treated by impermanence. They have there's a saying about, so weeds, so you can pluck weeds, you can do all kinds of various things, but all weeds are killed by boiling water. So boiling water poured onto any of them, so the anicca is, impermanence is a general remedy for all structures. But it's not always the thing that you respond to. So if you reflect, oh, this is just impermanent, this rises and passes away and so forth. This, yes, theoretically, if you really understood that, if it really talked to you, it would address all negative things, all the hindrances. But the problem is it's fairly subtle sometimes. Part of your mind is saying, yeah, but it's real enough now. You know, it's so-called impermanent, but it's real enough now. So there are a number of techniques. You don't have to go because of the idea of vipassana or watching the rise and fall is not exclusive or only technique. There are a number and a range of techniques, but the primary purpose of them is to free yourself from the hindrances, to weaken them by, because they're not getting used, they weaken. And they don't give nutriment to your delusion basis. And that's the way that's all we can do about delusion. Since we can't see it directly, we have to go to it through its what's sustaining it. So other practices like loving kindness, breath meditation and so forth are very valuable. They're also reducing the hindrances because when you're successfully doing them, for instance, loving kindness is a direct antidote to ill will. But it's also a direct, because you can absorb into it, it also doesn't nourish agitation, excessive discursive wandering of the mind, greed as well. When you're experiencing loving kindness, you're not greedy. You're actually probably experiencing it's very easy to transition to generosity from loving kindness. It completely excludes ill will. So the two main hindrances, ill will and craving, are absent when metta is present. And exclusively, metta, as opposed to, say, neutrality. Now, you don't need to always be in metta, in loving kindness. You can be, all that matters is the ill will is absent. There are many neutral states, many other states that are devoid of ill will. That's the critical thing. The most important thing is devoid of ill will. The positive side of that is metta, which also is devoid of ill will, and it also has a after effect, which tends to suppress ill will, the re-arising of ill will. It has an afterglow to it, just like anger does. After anger, it's hard to feel friendly. After being really friendly, it's hard to feel anger. So utilize these things and realize that they have an after effect. They have momentum. Once they're rolling, they tend to stay rolling. So whatever you do tends to keep doing. So metta is the positive thing. It's very beautiful, very positive. The Buddha, by the way, it's not at all. I mean, the Buddha's every second page of the suttas is the advocacy of loving kindness, dwelling in loving kindness. And that loving kindness can serve as a basis for insight, the rising of insight. Because it suppresses all the hindrances, leaves you in a lucid, open state, it improves your clarity, has so many benefits. And if then you can turn to reflection on the impermanence with loving kindness as a basis, and insight can arise that way as well. It weakens the sense of self as well. You don't have a narrow, grasping type of personality while you're in metta. So it expands the sense of personality. It identifies with others. You see yourself in others. You sympathize with it. You feel empathy. And so it's weakening your sense of self as a single, isolated individual. It's moving you out into a sense of identity with others. So that's also weakening the atta, the sense of self. So anicca can be reflected on. Anatta is more available. Anatta meaning not self, because the self is diluted by the sense of identifying, seeing yourself in others. And finally, the insubstantiality of self. If self changes like that, it's less likely that you're going to have a hard belief in an unchanging core self. You see, you feel the changes in yourself, especially with metta, you feel a diffuse sense of it. So when you come back to your sort of sense of identity, you saw a change, a big change is there. Maybe the whole thing is just a structure of processes. Eh? Anicca, dukkha, anatta, the three characteristics that are the what you see, these are the what they're called the lakanas or the marks, the characteristics of reality that liberate you. This frees you from suffering. If you can see the nature of reality is it's transient, like a dream, like a bubble, like the dew in the morning, transient like that, insubstantial like those things, dreams are insubstantial, bubbles are insubstantial, evaporating water is insubstantial, and this unsatisfactoriness, you realize this unsatisfactoriness goes away because it only arises when you mistake them for permanent and satisfactory. They're not permanent, they're not substantial, and they're not satisfactory because they are impermanent, insubstantial, and therefore unsatisfactory. You can't get them. You can't hold them, you can't keep them, but you can let go of them. And the Buddha says, I know you're wondering what's going to happen then, but I tell you, you will feel better. And that will feel better won't go away. You'll always feel better. Always. You'll always be right. Because it really is always impermanent and insubstantial. It always is. You'll always be right there. So that's the idea.